In the Buddhist tradition, there really is no time when creation began. It's just always been there. They speak often of beginningless ignorance, of the beginningless flow of human existence, beginningless samsara. And the Buddha understood how to stop one piece of it. He discovered how to do that. He brought one piece of it to an end. So what he teaches us, interestingly, I'm really fascinated by this, is that when we wake up in the morning, when we begin a day, or when we experience the flow of experience from one moment to the next, the challenge is not to take that and busily create something new out of it, but to allow it to quiet, to allow some of it to slip away. That's not nirvana, but it's a pretty good analogy of nirvana, to take this busy flow of experience and let some of it become quiet. That's what the Buddha discovered how to do, and that's what the Buddha teaches to his followers, particularly in this concept of nirvana. In some respects, diametrically opposed to the image of human life that grows out of some of the theistic traditions of the West, and yet it serves, in my opinion, as a remarkable counterpoint and supplement and challenge, really, to the approach that many of us bring to the experiences of our ordinary, everyday lives. So the first way to answer the question about why Buddhists would seek nirvana is to recognize quite seriously that samsara is a problem that needs to be solved. And it's solved by allowing the busy flow of experience in some way to become quiet and come to an end. But it seems to me, as with the concept of suffering, that this isn't the whole story. It's not the whole picture, in truth. Because nirvana wasn't just the moment of death for the Buddha. It wasn't his parinirvana. It was also that moment of his awakening that took place when he was a young man, and he realized that at that point he was free from all the ignorance that drove the cycle of transmigration. And then he lived for 40 years. A long, productive, eloquent, spontaneous life, free life, moving through the roads of northern India, reacting to the experiences of people around him, teaching them the Dharma, begging his food, building a community of disciples and followers, and setting in motion this remarkable religious tradition that we're studying together. So if you want to understand what's positive about nirvana, I think the most important thing to do is try to imagine as well as we can, and we have just really fragmentary indications of what this person was like, but try to imagine as well as we can what he was like, what that Buddha was like as he glided through the landscape of northern India for 40 years after his awakening. What kinds of words would we put on that? Well, I think we have to say, using the language of the Indian tradition, that he was exquisitely free, first of all. He was free from desire, he was free from ignorance, and there was nothing in that sense that troubled him or disturbed his heart. And as a result of that, he was able to respond freely to the interests and the needs of people around him. That story that I told you when we were talking about the life story of the Buddha, about Angulimala, that strange Buddhist mass murderer who strung a string of fingers around his neck, shows a remarkable image of the Buddha himself, really, as a teacher, as somebody who was able to respond to the distinctive needs of a person who would, for other people, be extraordinarily frightening, and to touch his heart and to convert him to a different way of understanding himself and the nature of the world. So he is free. He's unattached. He's able to touch people in a certain kind of powerful and distinctive way. I think you would also have to say that he's wise. He understands what the world brings. There's nothing that's going to shake him in that in that sense. So we can speak about the Buddha as being wise, as being unattached, as being free, and able to act with a certain spontaneity and clarity of mind in his relationship to others. And also, I think it's appropriate to say that he embodies a certain quality of compassion as well, a certain kind of compassionate ability to respond to other people's needs, although the concept of compassion is not one that we begin to speak of in a technical sense until we come to the Mahayana. It would be extremely unwise, I think, to imagine that this Buddha was so rarefied and so detached from the experience of suffering in the ordinary world that he could not respond to the suffering in other people. That's what we mean, really, by compassion in the Buddhist tradition.